The Volume.
This is the Best of the Colin Coward podcast. Some great guests this week, going to bring you all the best moments. But first up, the best of my rants for the week.
Nobody with a brain thinks the NFL is dying. Two things make the NFL unstoppable. Scarcity, meaning fewer games, and we bet it. Soccer in Europe, fewer games, and they bet it. Cricket is actually called Europe's national pastime, but it lasts 3 to 5 days. Stop worrying about the NFL's ratings. They've got an 11-year contract that starts in 2 years. Any sport in any country that has fewer games that people bet will be the most popular sport. I had picked the Indianapolis Colts to win one of the worst divisions in sports, probably the second weakest, although you can certainly make an argument today it's the weakest, the AFC South. The Jags are rebuilding. Houston could arguably be the worst team in the league, certainly the worst roster if not for Deshaun Watson. I'm a sell on Tennessee. Chad Millman and I talked last week. Their over-under is about 9.5. I see him as an absolute under. I think Ryan Tannehill losing Arthur Smith as an offensive coordinator is a big setback. And then you have the Colts, who have largely done everything right except the quarterback position. Chris Ballard's a pretty conservative general manager, and he decided to finally go for it. He's used great discretion in his spending, but said, you can do everything right in this league, but if you don't get the quarterback right, at best, you're a playoff team. It's very much Andy Reid and Brett Veach before Patrick Mahomes. Great GM. Great coach. You're just a one-and-done playoff team until you get the quarterback right. So they go spend money on Carson Wentz. I totally support the move. It's a go-for-it move. In that division, Wentz, in terms of raw talent, stands out. He comes off a terrible year, and they gave up virtually nothing to get him from Philadelphia. So they really, if you will, won the deal. They won the trade with the Eagles. And then Carson Wentz, first week of camp, gets hurt. And here's the real dilemma. They don't have a backup quarterback. So they drafted two drafts ago, Jacob Eason out of Washington. So I watched Jacob Eason a ton because he went to the University of Washington where I grew up. And I try to watch 6-7 Husky games a year. He looks the part. Big, strong kid, big, powerful arm. The issue with him is cognitive. He struggles off script. He struggles after half. When Chris Peterson had him, first 10, 12, 15 plays scripted, he was fantastic. He can make all the throws. Second halves, bigger games, better opponents, he really struggled. And he's not a starter in the NFL, in my opinion. Absolutely brutal luck for the Colts. They simply right now do not have a quarterback in camp that I think can win a game in the first 5 weeks. So it's the ultimate dilemma. I seriously wonder, unless they can sign a capable backup, if it doesn't torpedo the season. The average age of an NBA player is 26. The Lakers' average now is closer to 33. So they add Carmelo Anthony to Dwight Howard, to LeBron James, to Trevor Ariza, to Russell Westbrook. Carmelo's 38 in November. Dwight's 36 in December. Trevor Ariza just turned 36. They were the oldest team in the NBA last year. And I don't want to hear about Kendrick Nunn. The Warriors had him in their G League and let him go. Pat Riley let him go. Bob Myers and Pat Riley are two of the smartest guys in the NBA. They both had Kendrick Nunn. He's essentially a younger Dion Waiters. He's not a catch-and-shoot guy. He's highly erratic. Pat Riley and Spoelstra, let Kendrick Nunn go. I don't want to hear about Malik Monk. You really think next June this is going to be the headline? Malik Monk leads the Lakers to the title. This team is old. And by the way, I love veteran players. But the Milwaukee Bucks last year were 27 and a half years old. Giannis is 26. Chris Middleton, 29. Bobby Portis, 26. Pat Connaughton, 28. You got to have some youth. Malik Monk is not going to get a lot of minutes in playoff games. Kendrick Nunn is Dion Waiters. He's one of those sort of give him the ball and let him go. and he can occasionally get really hot. You think LeBron's going to allow that in big playoff spots? This team is not as good defensively as they were a year ago, okay? And they don't really have guys who are going to get big minutes in playoff games and hit big shots. So, you know, I feel like with LeBron James, there's always been this sort of theory that LeBron will make it work. I think he could for the first 15 years of his career. I don't think that's as easy to do now. And by the way, I could argue the Lakers don't have a single elite player in their prime. The Bucks won, Giannis in his prime, Middleton in their prime. You cannot tell me Anthony Davis is in his prime. It's year 10. His injuries now are piling up. He's not out of his prime by much, but I'd make an argument he does not have another 10 years. I'd make an argument he'll be an eroding player within 2 years. Anthony Davis has had too many injuries, and they're now happening on a more consistent basis. This is an old basketball team, and Kendrick Nunn and Malik Monk aren't the answer to the finals. They're not going to get big minutes in a playoff series. There's no way LeBron would trust either in a big spot. It's an interesting team. It's a weird roster. It's an antique store. I'll watch, but with some skepticism. All right, I want to bring in Ike Taylor, who is as honest as any Steeler ever. 12 years, 2 Super Bowl rings, absolutely no bullshit. You know, I've been critical of Ben because I don't think he's quite as committed as maybe a Russell Wilson or a Brady in the offseason. But not everybody's the same. I always thought Elway was more committed than Dan Marino. Not everybody's the same. In the Le'Veon Bell AB drama, you know, I said the connecting thread is Big Ben. Maybe Big Ben, not the easiest guy to get along with. Is that a fair criticism? That sometimes Ben likes to... It's kind of his locker room, and if he feels he's getting not enough respect or enough props, that Ben's a little drama.
What Aaron Rodgers is looking for, Ben, as far as like, at least can I have some say so? Seven Ben having that, so it was really? it was never Colin, it was never issue. Seven to seven. Seven a little different. Seven ain't got to worry about what Aaron Rodgers is going through right now when you want to talk about personnel in front office, in the management. If Seven like you, you there. You know, that's just how it is. And what I've known about Seven is you play Seven in ping pong, he going to smoke you. You play him in golf, he going to smoke you. You play him in pickup basketball, regardless of what you want to say or how he look, he going to smoke you. He's just like a natural all-around athlete. So you like, dang, Seven, okay, you could have been an All-American basketball player. You just chose football. I can't say that about a lot of other quarterbacks, you know, in the NFL. So Seven prides himself on being very competitive. Now to get back on what you just said, I'm going to leave it like this. You said it.
Well, first of all, let's be specific just for a second. So you said if he likes you, you're in. So I mean, I've never heard that. So Ben would go to Kevin Colbert or Mike and say, I like this. I mean, even draft, free agent stuff?
Now, it's once you're on a team, you're on a team. Now, you got to – for him, he's not a part of the draft and the personnel part. Once you're on the team and he feel like you're capable of helping the team and himself, we got action. Once he feels like you might be a problem, it's going to be a little bit hard. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
And that's what I mean. He's not into the drafting because that's – you know how I feel about Kevin Colbert. I feel like he's a future Hall of Fame Ozzie Newsome. You know what I'm saying? Once he right. retires. But Seven is, okay, if you're not going to be consistent, if you're not going to come in like me, if you ain't going to put in the work like me, we got an issue. You know, and in my personal opinion, it's all off of the competitive nature of seven. Like I say, seven could have played a lot of different sports, Colin. A lot. And I can't say that about too many quarterbacks in the league and been very successful at it.
How was your relationship with Ben? Did you stay mostly on his good side?
Him and I were shuffleboard champions in the locker room. See, people think I be talking about Ben. I'm just looking at it probably how you looking at it. So I'm looking at it from a standpoint, okay, you got a young AFC North with three young studs, a Joe Burrow, a Lamar Jackson, and a Baker Mayfield. If we can't go it on and win a championship right now with seven at the helm, it's going to be even harder once you find his successor because of the experience of Lamar have, a former MVP, the experience that you see with Baker Mayfield. Now he got a good GM and a head coach. The experience you would have some with a Joe Burrow and what he possibly could do if he stay healthy. That's how I'm looking at it from a general manager standpoint.
Do you ever worry about, we're not the NBA here, dude. You got to play hard every week. Do you ever worry a little bit about that the physicality's diminished a little?
No, because that's the rules that have changed with the head-ups in the NFL. You know what I'm saying? So we just, as players, either you adjust or your ass going to be out of the league ASAP. If me, Ryan Clark, Troy Polamalu, Chris Hope, Casey Hampton, Larry Foote, James Harrison, James Ferrier, if all us was playing right now the way we played, we'll probably be in the league for 3 years because they probably would have took all our money and we would have got suspended for 6 to 8 games, let alone a year suspension. That's just what it is. You know what I'm saying? So with the concussion protocol and they changing, for us it was hit the head, the body will follow. For these guys, you got to lead with your shoulder. So as a player, you just have to adjust, not because you really want to. That's the way the NFL is going right now.
Did you ever feel as a Steeler you intimidated offensive players?
100%. Colin, you couldn't fuck around with us, man. As soon as a player or a coach or an offensive coordinator said we had to be physical against the Pittsburgh Steelers, we already knew we won because that might not have been y'all personality. We knew that,
right.
we knew that's all our personality was. Smash faces, and we used to call it FaceTime back in the day. And we used to call it catching a body. Who gonna be the first to catch a body? You know what I'm saying? So for
right.
us, we looked at it in my time, Colin, like, so you mean to tell me I can take the soul out of another man, physical wise, and not go to jail? Sign me up. So that's exactly what our personality was. But then we got it off of the greats, the 70 Steelers, the Mean Joe Green when he was in the front office and he used to tell us stories. The Rocky Blyers, the Mel Blunts, the Lynn Swans, the Francos, how them guys used to play hurt and didn't give a F about who they was playing. It was all about them. So that just triggered us to try to replicate what the old school guys was doing.
Add a little excitement to your sports watching experience by betting on all the action on the FanDuel Sportsbook. There's a reason why FanDuel's America's number one sportsbook. The app is really simple to use. I use it every day. Great odds, all different betting markets. Fun bet types like same game parlay. That's the best thing they have, the same game parlay. If you win, get your winnings safely in as little as 24 hours. Listen, they've got a range of betting options, player props, futures, live betting, easy to place your bet fast during a game, odds boosts and specials every day. There's some big super boost each weekend. Product features, multi-game parlay, same game parlay. Right now, FanDuel letting you place your first bet risk-free up to $1,000. Place a bet, any game, FanDuel will refund you up to $1,000 if you don't win your first bet. Seriously, no strings attached. Just place a bet, any bet you want. All right, The volume in FanDuel are boosting the odds on UFC 265. Derek Lewis or Cyril Gane to end in a knockout or TKO. This fight will be absolute fireworks. If you've never tried FanDuel Sportsbook, what are you waiting for? Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app, promo code Colin, FanDuel Sportsbook app, promo code COLIN. 21 plus and present in Colorado, Indiana, or New Jersey. Must wager in designated offer market. $10 first deposit required, $150 max bonus. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gaming problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, and 1-800-GAMBLER in Jersey. Did you know the first time you faced Brady, he was great?
Nah, but I don't know if you – and Larry Foote is the linebacker coach for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah.
Larry Foote was – he played ball at Michigan with Tom Brady. And he was the first to tell us. He said, look, Tom wasn't starting at Michigan, but Tom is one of us. And what he meant by one of the us was the guys. Tom is one of the guys, and Tom always came in to close games. If he ever start in the NFL, he won't look back. And I'll be damn it, Larry Foote wasn't lying at all.
Yeah. You had some huge games with Brady. I mean, you were in big, close, competitive games. What was the secret to giving – was there ever a secret with Tom?
Man, Tom don't give a fuck. Tom Chip is, I'm a six round mother freaking draft pick. Y'all didn't like my size. You didn't like my combine. I'm about to smoke the NFL for as long as I can. That chip on the shoulder, Colin, is still there to this day. Because he wasn't entitled.
Right.
He wasn't coming from an heir. He likes, and to this day, and coaches will tell you in Temple, man, put me around the 53rd guy on the roster because him and I can relate. You get your first and second round quarterbacks, maybe third, and they get to start and have some kind of success. I don't know if they're going to go to the equipment manager and be like, man, put me in with the last guy on the roster because I can relate to him. You know what I'm saying? That's what makes Tom different. You know, Tom, and I talked about being competitive. Boy, you got to hear Tom Brady on the field, boy.
Like
Tom
what?
Tom Brady, he's very disrespectful. Man, in a manly way, in a competitive way, you know, not disrespectful as in being disrespectful to your family or anything else. I'm talking about that football competitiveness. Very disrespectful in a good way.
Let's bring in John Middlecoff, former NFL scout, my buddy. A report out of the 49ers camp that Trey Lance looks ready to play. You're very connected to the Bay Area teams. You know, it's I like Garoppolo more than most. You know, I kind of put him in that Derek Carr camp where I think he can sling it. I think he's confident. But there are moments when Kyle Shanahan's taking the ball out of his hands in big spots, and that's just a bad sign. You saw that with McVay and Jared Goff before it ended. You can sense when a coach doesn't trust a quarterback. You've seen that with Kirk Cousins multiple times in his career. I want to throw this at you as a former scout. I could make the argument based on the early Niners schedule. There's value in playing Jimmy Garoppolo and letting him look great and then moving him. Even if you liked Trey Lance, you could get something for him. You can show him off to the league. If you felt that Lance was even in your Kyle Shanahan, do you still play him or do you gamble with it? Go with Garoppolo, show him off, and dangle him on the market.
Yeah, to me, the tie goes to Trey Lance on this one, if that's the way. I'm going to practice on Tuesday and Wednesday. We'll see. I know everything that happened, I guess, on Saturday with shorts and t-shirts. They put on pads starting tomorrow. The thing in football, I mean, Trey Lance, I went to OTAs. He's big. He's got a huge arm. I mean, he when you're standing right next to him, it's like, wow, that's what it's supposed to look like. Jimmy's not a great practice player either. even the year the Niners went to the Super Bowl, like Jimmy struggles in practice. He throws a lot of picks in practice.
Wow.
He's not a great decision maker in practice. So the momentum, right, for the last 4 years, Jimmy could struggle in practice. And around here, it was just a big story. Jimmy throws two picks in practice. But C.J. Beathard, Nick Mullins, nothing was going to happen. Now the elephant in the room is three first-round draft picks for Trey Lance. What are we waiting for? And right. You can feel the momentum if the preseason games, if he's looking good, I think Jimmy could get past. I don't think you can be consumed with the value because, Colin, last year, before Jimmy got hurt, he wasn't that good. So you're just playing him for, quote-unquote, to get the value. Like, there's a chance that might just not even work. And what if you lose the Lions-Eagles, which the Niners have to start 2-0. That's as easy of a start as you're going to get for a good team. Like, if you look around the league, what if Jimmy screws up one of those games and all of a sudden you lose to the Eagles because you were trying to just pump up Jimmy's value in hopes of trade? He makes $20 million, Colin. Like, I don't think he's tradable at this point in time, which he clearly, the offseason, you could tell, like, they were hoping to get, like, a second-round pick. At that price range, no one was trading for him.
So about the only way you can move him is if a team gets completely desperate, perhaps the Colts. Wentz has surgery. It's week five. We're 1-4. So I agree with you. I think he is a hard move. But God, teams in this league, John, they get desperate fast.
I do think for the Colts, if you had to rank their desperate options right now, I think first off, you're calling Phillip Rivers, see if he'll hang up the whistle for a year and come back. He just knows what you're doing. Maybe he'll come back for, you know, some sort of per game bonus, like $1 million a game or something, that, you know, a contract that gets you to $25 million, but on the cap, it's only like $3 or $4 million, something like that. I think Nick Foles, who makes a lot less than Jimmy and Frank knows. Now that would be weird, right? Carson and Nick already back together. I think Jimmy is clearly below those two guys in terms of options because they just know Frank. They know the offense. Jimmy, you know, does Frank comfortable? Like, the terminology, is it the same? Those are things that I'm sure they've been talking about the last couple of days. Could you have two injury-prone quarterbacks in Jimmy and Carson on the same roster that combined to make like $55 million? You know, I know that they're desperate, but I think the one thing, and you know Ballard, I think a defining characteristic for him, which has really been impressive, right? How well he's handled these tough situations that he's, you know, from Josh quitting to Andrew quitting to now this situation. You just watch. Like, I do think his personality is made for to not overreact because everything he's done for the last 3 or 4 years to build this thing has been play it steady. And look at this move. I mean, I wouldn't say trading for Carson Wentz was an overreaction. If anything, he kept pushing back against the Eagles. Like, guys, I'm not trading you two first round picks for this guy. He ended up not even, if Carson never plays for him, it doesn't even turn into a first round pick. So he got him relatively cheap. Now, the problem is it just they're very dependent on him because, like, you know, you don't have a quarterback, you know, Sam Ellinger and Eason. Like, I mean, honestly, if those two guys had to play the whole season, how many games do you think they'd win? Seven? Maybe? I mean, their team's still good, but
the team's
their quarterback play would be horrendous.
Speaking of quarterbacks, I'll pivot to Justin Herbert. So a friend who I respect, an athlete, was at the Chargers practice the other day with Justin Herbert. And he said to me, he is so good. He's huge in person.
Yeah.
And he said, he throws the easiest ball I've ever seen a quarterback throw, including Mahomes. And it's funny. Telesco will tell you privately that, you know, they had huge concerns with Justin because in college he looked so reluctant to make throws.
Colin, the entire league did. You know, I mean, he wasn't alone, right? Everyone did not think Justin Herbert was going to be this.
And it goes back to Mario Cristobal. So Cristobal, in my opinion, is Les Miles, an offensive line coach that has a presence and can recruit, and he gets elevated to head coach and creates a power running game and a prehistoric offense. And if you go look, the last 3 or 4 recruiting classes for Oregon have been best in the Pac-12 and among top 7 or 8 in the country. What's remarkable is since Cristobal's been there, they're one game above 500 on the road and one game again above 500 against ranked teams. And that I have, having covered the Ducks, I have several people close to the program that we talk about this, not frequently, but once, twice a year. And they all say the same thing. And there are people that know football. I mean, Oregon's got a lot of former athletes, a lot of former Ducks, a lot of former NFL guys that I know, that I talk to. And they all say the same thing. You know, he's Les Miles. He can recruit. He has a presence. That's why he got the job. But man, if you're a quarterback, remember Les Miles' issues with Nick Saban's why he got fired? Like they couldn't get first downs against Nick. And I mean, even coaches, you know, who have not done well and been fired in the SEC, you know, former Texas A&M coach Kevin Sumlin moved the ball against Nick Saban.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I look at Justin Herbert and it's a little bit of a cautionary tale that, you know, for Oregon, number one, you got a coach that can recruit, but I'm not sure if he can do anything else. And number two, in your years of scouting, when the best GMs in the league that I know had huge reservations about Justin Herbert. Now, Telesco liked him, but you know, there was a list. I talked to him multiple times, and without getting into these conversations and giving away what he said, they were almost Joel Klatt, similarly. They were almost all about, boy, he just doesn't let her rip. Boy, he can be hesitant. Now, Klatt's like, oh my God, I whiffed. That's not the issue.
Well, I think if you look back, one thing that I don't think was talked about enough, because historically, it, definitely since I've been watching the Ducks, when Bilotti took over and then Chip, they had a lot of offensive skill guys who were elite. Justin did not play with NFL offensive skill guys. The wide receiver's not getting drafted. Probably the worst set of running backs in Oregon's, you know, since they've become a legit program. So he was playing with guys that really should more like Nevada players than Oregon, you know, high-end Power 5 level talent. So when you look back, you go, you know, it's kind of unfair to judge him. Not guys weren't getting open. He wasn't playing with other NFL players. His physical skill set is elite, right? You said not just the size, his arm, he's Josh Allen-like. But, you know, his personality, I think, was another thing. Whether it's fair or not, you go program, quarterback, Marcus Mariota, similar makeup, high character, people love him, but he's very reserved and quiet. And people are like, I don't know if this is going to work. Well, his talent, unlike Mariota, is in a different stratosphere.
Yes.
I mean, that throw that went viral the other day, and listen, it's training camp stuff, but on the move to throw it like that and hit the guy in stride, I mean, that was like Farvian. I mean, that's his skill set. Like, I text Daniel Jeremiah, who was there. He's like, this kid, he looks awesome. And he looked but he has skill guys. Telesco's great at finding random skill, you know, offensive talent. Keenan Allen is an elite player. They always have good running. He's just playing with high-end talent. Colin, if that coach is good, and you never know with a young coach, Brandon Staley's only been in the league for, you know, 5 years. He's also a coordinator, so he's got a lot on the table. They should be competing to be a playoff team. Like, I love the Colts, and I thought I was high on them with Carson. But now it's like, could you just sub the Chargers out for the Colts? You know, it's like, couldn't they just be like a 10-11 win team, the Chargers? I mean, they have a quarterback who... Is it crazy to think that if things go well, he's in the MVP conversation? I mean, the quarterbacks never mature faster than they do in this game, right? Lamar won it year two. Why couldn't Herbert? He can throw it. He's much more of an explosive thrower. He doesn't need to run. He can throw 40 touchdowns this year, right? If they stay healthy with their offensive skill guys. I think sometimes we make too big a deal in the scouting community. I think humans do, just in general. Now, in football, you're paying a guy so much money at the hop of a draft and a quarterback when you're not assertive and loud. That turns people off, turns coaches off, turns GMs off. But sometimes people just, like, once you're around them, clearly people just gravitate toward them. At the end of the day, too, when you have that type of talent, the receiver's going to like you. The line is going to like to block for you. You're going to win. You're going to make everyone money. You're good for business. So, and clearly, I think that was a little overblown for him. I even think Mariota, if you look at it, like, I remember last year when he got the start with the Raiders, all the Titans were, people like these guys. Like, they're liked. Just because they're not the loudest guy in the room, that's not the most important thing all the time.
Bringing in my buddy Mike Silver. You've seen him for years, Sports Illustrated, Yahoo, Pass It Down podcast with his daughter Natalie. Been covering this stuff for a long time. So teams always want to make their draft picks look like their successes. GMs hate to bail on their picks.
And they extend they're gonna give guys sometimes to justify them. Yeah, you're right.
Yes. So I remember Daniel Jones' first camp with the Giants, and there was a lot of skepticism about him as a number six pick. And suddenly there were leaks from the Giants camp, slow-mo videos of Daniel Jones making wonderful throws. It was like nobody had video and it was leaking out, and I'm like, and it was slow-mo and the throws were great. And I remember at the time, I'd been at Fox a couple of years, and I was talking to a producer there, and I'm like, this is so transparent and orchestrated because they everybody is so down on him. They're just leaking this stuff. So some of the stuff I'm seeing from Tua in the Dolphins feels like, oh, any good throw, it gets social media within 30 seconds. But what do you, you know, my takeaway is I've just seen this. I know the game. Like Tua, once a day, a great video will come out and be like, okay, why'd that video come out? That's an interesting video the Dolphins released.
They definitely want us to think that Tua's getting better. They want Tua to think he's getting better. They want the people in the huddle to think he's getting better. But you're right. We're not going to know. And so, listen, it's just human nature. And they can say, oh, that's just media noise. It's not. And I love Chris Greer. If Chris Greer and Brian Flores are sitting there last year and they're like, yeah, our guy, he's young. He's coming along. We had to pull him out of some games that were important to us and throw Ryan Fitzpatrick in because he's better now. But, you know, we really believe in this kid. Wait, what did Justin Herbert just do? Like, whoa, like it is just, it's human nature. Like you could have had that guy, but you took this guy. How do they compare from the jump? Not well for you. Now that doesn't mean Tua can't get better or it doesn't mean you, you know, hate the fact that you picked him, but you're watching this, you know, revelatory guy look like he's just born to do it. And I want to underscore the fact that that first game where we all went and then he built on it, he had no prep. Anthony Lynn told me that, you know, the Chargers team doctors who might have been like Dr. Bombay from Bewitched for you old people, they were like, hey, Terod, let's give you a little shot there. Oh, we just punctured your lung. We're so sorry. You better go to this ambulance right now and make sure you don't, you know, have something horrible happen to you. And as that was going on, like, it's like, and the home of the brave. Whoosh. I don't know if they do flyovers there, but like all that's going on. And finally, Anthony Lynn says to Justin Herbert, who's pretty young and still doesn't know, he goes, hey, you're starting. And Justin kind of gives him the laugh like, ha ha. And Anthony goes, no, seriously, dude, you're the starting quarterback. And then it's like, there's the kickoff. And then he went in. I think they had the ball first. It was crazy.
The Cowboys acknowledge Dak had a little bit of a setback. And it's funny. When you pull a groin, you often pull the other side because you overcompensate. And my theory is Dak with a leg injury is overcompensating by becoming more of an arm thrower in practice. It's just completely natural.
That seems like what I would do if I could throw. Yeah.
Right. So I don't think it's a big deal, but they don't have a backup plan either. And you got to let this puppy heal. And they're on Hard Knocks and he's not playing. And their schedule's pretty tough early. You know, they open with the Buccaneers. Is there anything that concerns you a little about the Dak news?
Yes, because it's a quarterback and it's an arm. I mean, anytime it's a quarterback and it's a throwing arm, I don't care if it's fatigued or, you know, there's a little twinge or, yeah, I mean, you know how it is. It's like a pitcher. It's your arm, dude. And so, you know, quarterbacks can get by when they're a little hobbled sometimes or, you know, apparently without an MCL if you're, you know, Tom Brady. But if your arm starts getting, you know, janky, then I'm concerned. And, you know, I covered Joe Montana, I consider the greatest ever, when I was young in the business. And he was coming off two MVPs and, you know, almost three Super Bowls in a row. And all of a sudden in training camp, his elbow was just a little weird. And then next thing you do, he had surgery and missed the whole year.
Yep.
Well, the next year he came back and it was a quarterback competition between him and Steve Young. Think about that, by the way. We were covering that daily. But then I'll never forget, up in Rockland at Sierra College, he walked off early in the middle of an afternoon practice back to the locker room. And I knew him. I saw his face. And I'm like, something else happened. And it was the same elbow. Maybe not the same exact injury, but same elbow, new surgery, and he played again in the second half of the last game of the regular season. it's a whole other story. But he basically missed all of 2 years and then was on the Chiefs.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't worry a ton about it. But, you know, I always had this theory that, like the Lakers, they added a bunch of pieces. But they've only really got one player, Anthony Davis, in his prime.
Right.
Generally, you have to have, like, two stars in their prime to win a title, preferably 3 to 4 players in their prime. Anthony Davis, year 10, has had so many injuries, I'd argue he just left his prime.
Yeah, maybe.
So it's funny about the Cowboys. Name the players in their prime. Zeke isn't.
You know, what they're hoping is that we don't know these guys that well, but they're going to show us this year. You're right. I mean, the line, I mean, that, you know, maybe Zach Martin still is, but like that line.
Oh, boy.
That
I
line
don't know.
That line was special. That's what made special. And that's far from its prime collectively. But yeah, it's a good question.
And that's my point. Dak is one of the few.
Yeah, he's got to be Dak.
That's in his prime, and now he's hurt.
Yeah.
So like Zeke's not. Amari's not. No. CeeDee Lamb probably is at the end of this year.
Yeah.
Nobody on the O-line probably is. DeMarcus Lawrence should be.
Yeah.
But is under. So my takeaway on this thing is in the NBA, you need about 3 good players either in their prime or damn close. In the NFL, you probably need about 7.
Yeah.
And I just don't see a lot of Cowboys in their prime.
That wraps it up for the week. We're heading into another big week here at The Volume. Make sure to subscribe and follow us at The Volume Sports on Twitter and Instagram.
The Volume.